Hey there. I offer this podcast freely. Your support really makes a difference. To make a donation, visit reneemckenna.com. Welcome to Spiritual Psychology. My name is Renee Lavallee McKenna, and I bring my 30-plus years as a recovering addict and ex-crazy person turned therapist and shamanic healer to bring you snackable teachings on spirituality, psychology, and all things personal growth. And today I want to talk about the most important question we can ask in relationship. And this question can be helpful in romantic relationships, friendships, work dynamics, really any person, place, thing, or institution that we're engaged with can benefit by our conscious intention and attention. And being willing to question the people, places, and things in our life is really important, because it calls us into present awareness of what's actually going on, which can allow us to participate more fully and effectively in our own life and the lives around us, because everything really is interconnected. And when we're showing up and doing the best we can, that has positive implications for all of our connections in the concentric circles of our life. Concentric circles are kind of like a bullseye with us in the middle that has wider and wider circles around it. And whether we're aware of it or not, our actions and behavior and decisions have impact or consequences in the larger consciousness system. And the good news is, from my perspective, we don't actually need to know what's good for others. Because of the interconnectedness that we live in, I only really need to know what's good for myself. And I've come to trust that what is my own highest good is the highest good for everyone involved. Now, the highest good doesn't mean it's comfortable. In fact, some of the best decisions and changes and growth I've made in my life have been quite uncomfortable in the beginning. But growth and evolution call us outside of our comfort zone, into the wisdom and creativity, the universal intelligence that runs through every atom and cell of creation. We are all participating in a system, and one of the best things I can do to participate in that system is to care for my own health and well-being, to seek my own joy and fulfillment, and to align myself with this flowing life stream that is always calling me to higher evolutions of myself. My own evolution is part of the expansion of the universe. My own little personal contribution to it, or not, because the interesting thing as humans is that we actually have the free will to resist the flow of the life force, or even to devolve and destruct. And I've done both. Constructing and deconstructing, we all do. And there's healthy construction and there's healthy deconstruction. And there can also be unhealthy ways that we build things using our will that might be actually harmful to us and to others or the environment. And there are unhealthy ways that we deconstruct. I know when I was caught in the cycles of addiction, of dysfunctional relationships, of self-hatred and self-harming, those were destructive currents that had negative implications. More than once, I was a tornado ripping through other people's lives, leaving a wake of destruction, stealing things, lying, occasionally lighting things on fire, sleeping with your husband, not to mention the destruction of my own inner spirit with tremendous self-hatred, anxiety, and tons of self-abusive behavior, from making myself throw up to intermittently starving myself, having sex with people I didn't even know their name, and drinking and drugging myself into oblivion on a regular basis. Now, there is healthy deconstruction. We can look into the natural world for the cycles of death and rebirth that are a very important, healthy part of this flowing life force. If nothing ever died, the ecosystem would be quickly overrun, wouldn't be able to support itself, and would completely destruct. So there's a tremendous wisdom in understanding and participating willingly in this death-rebirth cycle on all levels. Not just the big death of people dying or pets or the plants or animals that we consume, because the death of plants and animals allow us to have life. And ultimately, we will die in compost and become part of that organic matter that regenerates more life for future generations. And the cycles of nature on the physical realm have much to teach us about the cycles of life force and consciousness on the metaphysical realm. And the Old Testament of the Bible instructs us in this in Ecclesiastes 3. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. There's a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. As we evolve as a species, we may outgrow that time for war, but we have not outgrown it yet. Probably the only questionable phrase, but that's a whole other subject. Or maybe not. Because if there's a circumstance in our life that is out of integrity, unjust, or unhealthy, if someone or something is imposing their will upon us in ways that feel harmful, then we may be called to go to war to protect ourselves, to keep the invaders out. And I'm speaking about war in the context of conflict, really any conflict or confrontation. And many of us are conflict avoidant to our detriment. So one of the things this wisdom passage calls us to is to know what time it is. Is it a time for something to be born or a time for something to die? Is it a time to gather or a time to let go? Is it a time to tear something or a time to mend it? And it is only by looking deeply within ourselves and being honest about our circumstances that we can read that psycho-spiritual time clock and recognize what direction we're being called to. That again, there is a wisdom of the life force, and when we align ourselves with it, things seem to go much smoother, even if they're challenging, that we're participating in the life flow. And when we resist it or deny it, it becomes dysfunctional. And it's usually pretty easy to tell if we're aligned or not aligned by how much peace, joy, or fulfillment we have, how happy we are, and how much pain, struggle, or discontent we're in. And the circumstances and relationships in our life have tremendous influence on how we're feeling and what we're doing. And all relationships and all circumstances are impermanent, and they have their optimal timing and life cycle. And particularly with relationships, there's this idea that a successful relationship lasts forever. People used to feel like that about jobs. I'm not sure that's so true anymore. And although there is a lot to be said for stability and structure and security, it's a necessary part of our life. We have to know that the sun's going to come up every morning. We'd be kind of screwed if it decided not to do that intermittently. But even the sun is impermanent, although none of us are going to live to see the end of that. For many people, to death do us part may make people die early if it's a miserable marriage. I know my grandparents were dedicated to hating each other for over 60 years. Many people stay in jobs they hate, spending a third of their life in misery to get a pension. Many stay in homes or living circumstances to create anxiety or depression or hopelessness because they're too afraid or they don't know how to make a positive change. And I know for me, some of the greatest angst I've had in my life has been the should I stay or should I leave question. Which direction am I putting my life energy? Am I harvesting? Or am I planting more? And my own inner wisdom meter was either underdeveloped or it got broken by the dysfunction of my family of origin. It has since been repaired, But this single question has been so valuable in helping me resolve the should I stay or should I go dilemma. And the question is there more for me to learn here? And I usually don't have to look too far internally and externally to get the answer to that simple question. Am I doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results? Or is there change and personal growth available to me in this circumstance? And because I do believe that we are all here to participate in this evolutionary unfolding, and that our own personal growth and development is intrinsic to that participation, it's the best thing I can do, is to grow and evolve. And I was introduced to this question when I was newly married to my first husband. I was 28 years old. I was 4 years clean and sober. I had just started my own business house cleaning. And I met this really cute and charming guy who immediately fell in love with me and literally asked me to marry him the first night we were together, which is super flattering. And maybe not coincidentally, or at least it's interesting, that myself and my mother and my father all got married in the same year. Now, I didn't get invited to either of their weddings, but that's another dysfunctional family story. And almost all those people, including my ex-husband, are dead. I believe my stepmother's still alive, but she put a tremendous amount of energy into not having a relationship with me, so I'd have to look her up, which I am not that interested in doing. Or maybe I'll do it later. But anyway, so my first husband's name was Paul. I met him while I was traveling, and we did a long-distance relationship for a couple months, and then he quickly moved in with me. And he had a long story about selling his construction business and having some serious troubles with the IRS, which was why he didn't have any money. But I did agree to marry him a year later. And about 3 days before the wedding, I had a really interesting conversation with my sister-in-law-to-be. And she mentioned something about Paul being 3 years sober. And I said, no, Paul's 5 years sober. And she said, oh, no. I remember where I was when he went into treatment. I was a senior in college. And although I had a sinking feeling I was going to vomit all over the floor, somewhere deep inside, I knew that I had been being lied to. And I proceeded to ask her a series of questions and find out that pretty much everything that Paul had told me about his history was untrue, including the fact that his mother did not have breast cancer, which was why we rushed the wedding, and a long list of other things, including that he never had a business or owned a house, and that he had been a couch surfing con artist since he was a teenager. And I have to tell you, we had 125 people coming to a wedding that was already paid for, and I did not have the balls to call it off. And I cried the morning of that wedding, knowing that this was not a good marriage. And I spent pretty much every day after that for quite a while agonizing over whether I should get an annulment or file for an early divorce. And I will tell you, 30 plus years later, that Paul was one of the greatest teachers of my life. And I had to face the fact that as much of a catastrophe as he was, but again, cute, charming, really good in bed, didn't even out in the long run, but I gave it a college try. He wanted me to save him, and I was down for the challenge. If I could just love him enough, maybe he would stop taking pills, all prescribed, of course, hold a job, tell the truth, be a good husband. It was very easy to focus on all the things that were wrong with him, because there were many, and they were real. But the partners we choose in intimate relationship are never a coincidence. And challenging as it was, I had to turn the lens on myself and realize that of all the men who had wanted to marry me, and there were a few, I picked him. And what was that about? And it was pointed out to me, as the great Carl Jung says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. What was it in me that was magnetized to a pathological liar? And he wasn't actually physically dangerous or abusive. Emotionally, spiritually, and energetically, it was a train wreck, but wasn't my first rodeo in a dysfunctional relationship. And although he might benefit from changing, it was pointed out that I was responsible for my own growth and choices. And if I had been drawn to this and I didn't know why, I'd better find out so it didn't happen again. That Paul Anderson was not actually my problem. He was a symptom of my problem, and my problem was my own dysfunction. And so the question, is there more for me to learn here, was nowhere more potent than in that 2.5 year marriage to this poor, misguided soul. In fact, it was coming to understand that that level of dysfunction and dishonesty is mental illness that I'm sure had influence on my very slow path toward becoming a therapist and healer. And I very wisely chose not to have his children or to completely intertwine my finances with his, although that marriage did drive me to bankruptcy, and there was some inner bankruptcy on the other side of that relationship as well. There did come a day when I could ask that question, is there more for me to learn here? And the answer was no. And that was the day he packed his bags and I told him to go. And he did. And I was a much stronger, smarter, self-aware woman than I was when we met. Now, I am not suggesting that you stay in a terrible situation. Because one of the things we learn when we ask ourselves that question, is there more for me to learn here, is when to get the fuck out. But when you do get out, if there is a time to do that, and again, this can be a living circumstance, a work circumstance, a family or friend circumstance as well, it is imperative to take the lessons from those dynamics so that we don't bring them forward and repeat them again. Now, it's no shame if we do, and I've had lots of repetitions, many things I've needed to learn over and over again until I get the message. And that's the introspection of this question, where am I being called to grow? That's another way to ask this question. Is there more for me to learn here, or where am I being called to grow? So I guess I'm leaving you with two questions. And in any difficult or challenging circumstance in your life, I encourage you to ask them, journal about it, sit quietly, listen to the still small voice within, talk to people who care for you, read wisdom literature. And when you ask yourself these questions, is there more for me to learn here? Or where am I being called to grow? The answers will come. Thank you so much for listening. I'm looking for some volunteers over the next few months to do demonstrations of my spiritual psychology work for my year-long mentorship program. Most presently, I'm looking for volunteers to do what's called negative energy extraction. And this really could be any presenting emotional or mental issue. Could be self-hatred and inner critic. Could be anxiety, depression, self-hatred, limiting self-beliefs. Using some gentle but very potent practices based on ancient Tibetan Buddhism, some shamanic technologies, Buddhist philosophy, and the best of Western psychology. So if you're interested to learn more, shoot me an email, info@reneemckenna.com. It's an opportunity to have a free session with me. We would record it, and then I'll share that with the many mentees who are learning to do my spiritual psychology work and apply it into their own life and practice. Check out my new YouTube channel. There's a link in the show notes. Deep gratitude to my supporters on Patreon and through this podcast. Blessings on your path until we meet again. This is Renee LaValle McKenna for Spiritual Psychology.